how does it help me hire people better? And the thing that always was apparent to me in my career is that the hardest data to get is effectiveness data. Does it actually work? Like, you can calculate whether something's biased if you know the demographics of your hiring pool. You can do a little simple, you know, calculation, right? But is it effective? Well, you have to have criterion data. You have to have job performance or company performance data of some sort. You got to have supervisor ratings that are collected in an objective way, not part of the traditional rating process, because those ratings are garbage. You've got to have, you know, if you're working in a call center, maybe you can access metrics like average handle times or number of units sold or customer service scores or whatever. Those are metrics you can use, but you've got to be able to predict those things.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hi, this is William Tincup, Ryan Leary with the Use Case Podcast with Eric from Vero AI on today. And I've known of Eric for a number of years. I think this might be the first time we've actually been together, but I've known of you and your work. So this is going to be a lot of fun to kind of hear what your new venture is. And so why don't we start off with introductions? Why don't you give us an introduction to yourself and also Vero AI?
Okay, great. Well, thank you both for having me on. It's great. Really appreciate the opportunity. So my name is Eric Seidel. I am an industrial organizational psychologist by training, which is, you know, basically business psychology. If you're in the UK or Europe, that's what they call it, which is a much better name. But we prefer the complicated long form name, industrial organizational here. But essentially, you know, I studied statistics and tests and measures and things in school. And I spent most of my career doing pre-hire assessment. So large scale selection and assessment stuff where we would create tests and simulations, job simulations, and collect a ton of data on candidates and use that to try to predict the likelihood of success in a role. So lots of statistics, lots of measurement and lots of, you know, calculations and using regressions and correlations and everything to try to make a difference for our clients, help them hire better people, and then show the ROI of doing that. So that's kind of my background from a, you know, educational perspective.
You have a PhD?
Yeah, PhD. Yep.
What I know of IO psychologist is I spoke at PSYOP. A couple of years in a row.
Right.
And most IO psychologists like to drink. So I'm not sure if I was just in the wrong crowd, which usually happens a lot.
Like I was with the Hogan bottle.
No, yeah. I mean like I was with Hogan and all the Hogan, the personality assessment people, with Charles Handler at different points, and just like,
yeah,
it was insane. But they're fun. I call them propeller heads. But lovingly. Because they're actually really fun people to be around.
Yeah. I'm super drunk right now, to be honest. No, I'm not.
Slurring your words, the big bourbon bottle on the back.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you just went with it. You just ran with it. That's awesome.
I think he was more shocked that you could see it. He was shit, I got caught. So Eric, let's, so you're with Vero, right? Like, let's talk
Vero,
about
Vero or Vera.
Vero AI. Yeah, we have to make sure the AI is on.
100%.
Vero AI. Okay. So let's talk about Vero AI. I want to say Vero. It feels easier. But Vero AI.
People will do this.
Yeah, they're going to change your name, of course.
Yeah.
What's the problem that you all are trying to solve? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, let me go back to the beginning, if I may, for a second. So It's December 20th, 1996.
Oh,
yeah.
I love the storytelling aspect.
Yeah.
I love it.
I turned 23 that day, and my parents gave me a book called The Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
Now, this is a book that talks a lot about using science to shine a light on the world around us and to get rid of pseudoscience and bullshit You know, just all the stuff. Right. And so I still go back to this book today. And, you know, Carl Sagan has so many great quotes in there, but one of them is spurious accounts that snare the gullible are readily available. Skeptical treatments are much harder to find. Skepticism does not sell well. And I would expand that to say science doesn't sell well.
Oh, 100%.
And so, but that's always been the thing that has stuck with me is there's so much BS out there in the world, and I want to use science to help shine a light on it and find objective truth. Now, I would mention Carl Sagan died that same day, December 20th, 1996. So, yeah, it's
billions and billions and billions of stars. Yeah, the whole bit.
Wow.
But that's, you know, that has been my sort of guiding light, I think, throughout my career. I went to, you know, school, got the, you know, PhD in IO psychology and all this stuff. And, you know, then spent 20 years doing assessment stuff where we really tried to focus on building tools that really work, that we could demonstrate work. So lots of data, lots of statistics, lots of science. And, you know, sometimes you find that they don't work. Okay, great. Go back and fix it. As long as you're looking at the data, you're always making it better. You know, that was always sort of our mantra in that world. And along the way, what happened is I sort of became more and more a part of marketing. So I did more and more marketing as I grew in that role and was more and more, you know, facing the market and just seeing all the statements that vendors make, that our competitors make, or that other people in the space make, and that we made, you know, and I realized, and it's always, it's this line, you know, there's like, there's marketing and then there's reality. And in the best companies, those messages are pretty close, but they're never identical.
They're never intersecting.
In fact, if they're identical, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because you've got to lead, you've got to lead the buyer to a place.
Yeah.
And if you're just talking about what you are now, there's a book, it's about the lean startup movement, but it's called Lean Analytics.
Mm-hmm.
The first chapter of this book is all about how founders are psychopaths because they live in their world. They live in the past, present, and future tense.
Yeah.
And they can't delineate. So if someone says, hey, is that feature, is it live? Well, the founder knows that it will be live next Tuesday, but right now they're asking a question is it live? Yes.
Right.
Technically,
it is live.
It's a psychopath.
Right. Yeah.
But in their world, that they have to be able to kind of manage those things and be able to say, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, why don't we set up a meeting for Wednesday so that we can show you everything and blah, blah, blah. But so marketing, I think, has to lead. I think it's the veracity of that leading. And also how far of it is outside of the actual roadmap.
Mm.
You know, like this is something I've seen with a lot of software companies where they sell the roadmap, not what's built.
Yeah.
And it's like the person that's buying the prospect, the practitioner, they fall in love with the roadmap. Like, oh my God, this fixes all the problems that we have. And like in your world, in that world was pre-hire, this fixes everything. And it's integrated with all the stuff that we already use. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. But they don't tell them that's not going to be that way until 9 months later.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, that is a huge, huge challenge. And I think it's not just the, you know, founders or CEOs that are psychopaths, but, you know, the whole sales teams are psychopaths too.
They believe the mission.
Yeah, that's right.
They're incentivized to believe in the mission.
Yeah. I mean,
economic reason.
You try to reduce that distance as much as possible. But a lot of companies, they're not even trying to reduce that distance. They're increasing the distance. And, you know, sometimes the marketing messages are like the best case possible scenario. And then other times they're like completely made up and divorced from reality. And then the other thing I've seen a lot is that the messages will be focused on one thing to the exclusion of other things. So like what happened in selection, in the selection space, I think, is when I first started out, nobody was talking about DEI.
Right.
And our clients
or cared adverse
about,
impact.
Yeah. I mean, well, they cared about adverse impact from a legal perspective, but that's 100%. It. And right. They only really cared about the validity, the predictive power of the tool. And then, you know, DEI became a much more talked about topic, and then everything switched. And then now it's like, that's the most important thing. And the validity is secondary, but a lot of times they don't even talk about validity anymore. So you'll see like a lot of tools out there that purport to do better selection, better hiring, and they don't talk about the effectiveness of the tool. They only talk about the lack of bias, or the bias is minimized or something like that. So then you have to wonder, but does it work? And that's where I always use this example of like, you can flip a coin, decide who to hire, and you're not going to violate any bias regulations. You're not going to violate data privacy regulations. So you're good to go from a legal perspective, but from an effectiveness perspective, you've got some
50-50,
you know? Yeah.
You got to have a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're good.
So
the work that you did in pre-hire that led you to this place right now, you've seen the hype machine several times, in SaaS and on-premise software to SaaS. You've seen mobile, you've seen social. You saw probably 4 or 5 years ago AI, generally speaking. Now more generative AI. And the lies, the lies on all of those have been expanded exponentially, right? So when you walk like a floor at a conference, or you're just wandering around looking at different firms, et cetera. And let's start with AI. You don't have to go way back, but what's the level, what's the degree of lies that you're dealing with that a buyer would need to be aware of?
Yeah.
And I'm asking the question to help buyers understand, like, what should they be asking of the vendors that they're dealing with? Like, what is this?
That's great. Yeah. I think that when I'm walking, you know, the floor of HR tech or something, and I'm looking at the claims that are on the booth and everything, my mind is constantly just in criticize mode. You know, I'm just looking at what statement are they making? I wonder how they got to that statement, and what are they not saying that's, you know, missing from the message too. So you see so many different claims. Like if you see a claim that says something like, hey, we reduce bias by 20% or something, it's a, okay, well, how did you calculate that? What data did you use to calculate that? And, you know, walk me through in depth what you did. Because probably what they did is, in most cases, what they did is they have like a small sample that they collected with one client, and it's like 50 people or whatever. And they found that, you know, if you use their tool, then it helped you hire a couple more people from a protected class or something. And so they got this huge statement on their booth that makes it sound like it's going to reduce bias all over the world by 20% or whatever the case is. And that just came from this little tiny set of data, right? And so you really have to dig in to find out, okay, how did you actually calculate that? And what was the outcome metric you used? And, you know, you don't have to get a PhD in statistics. You just have to think through it a little bit and know that it's probably 80% bullshit, whatever, you know, that statement. So not to say that it might not work. But then you have to wonder too, like, okay, so again, going back to the coin flip analogy, like, so, okay, it reduces bias. What else does it do? How does it help me hire people better? And the thing that always was apparent to me in my career is that the hardest data to get is effectiveness data. Does it actually work? Like, you can calculate whether something's biased if you know the demographics of your hiring pool. You can do a little simple, you know, calculation, right? But is it effective? Well, you have to have criterion data. You have to have job performance or company performance data of some sort. You got to have supervisor ratings that are collected in an objective way, not part of the traditional rating process, because those ratings are garbage. You've got to have, you know, if you're working in a call center, maybe you can access metrics like average handle times or number of units sold or customer service scores or whatever. Those are metrics you can use. But you've got to be able to predict those things in new hires, you know, so you've got to be able to do this calculation that shows if you use this tool, then you're going to hire people who can perform better on these metrics, and it's going to save you X amount of dollars. But it's really hard to get that data. It's much easier just to say, hey, we've got a tool. Trust us, it works. We tested it with a bunch of companies, pay us $1 million, and here it is. It's going to be great. You know, and a lot of people are like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. But then it's in use and it's not being monitored and right. It's not being tied to outcomes right. that matter. Guaranteed, it's not doing much at that point. And even if there was evidence that it reduced bias in the beginning or, you know, with other clients, if you're not monitoring that in your own organization, you know, it's probably not doing anything. It right. may be helping a tiny bit, but the validity and the effectiveness and the bias of these tools degrades over time. And if right. you're not monitoring them, you got no idea what's going on. So that's a problem.
When do people bring you in? Are they mm-hmm. doing this during the buying cycle or to do that due diligence? Or is this after the fact? They've already made their decision. They bring you in now to monitor, measure, and make sure things are going as planned.
Both. We can do vendor type of analyses and just look at what is behind the marketing materials and really dig in to see whether right. and how these tools were worked. I mean, my company, so Vero AI, we have 7 people total right now, and 6 of us are PhDs. So we have a lot of scientific expertise that can ask those hard questions and dig beyond the, you know, the billboard statements and everything. But then also, what we're really building is this platform that can read in data and constantly and continually evaluate it to see whether and how a tool is or isn't working. So that's the crux of what we're building. It's not a consulting company per se, although mm-hmm. We do more consulting now than software, I would say. But that balance will change over time as right. we continue to take the scientific method and the statistical stuff that's in our brains and automate it in our software
right.
platform.
That's right. It would be at one point, it'll be AI as a service. And it, for me, if I'm telling someone else, what do you do? I'm saying they're the bullshit detector.
Yeah, that's exactly how I would love for you to position us. Yeah.
Okay. So, because everyone,
like I think you should send this to t-shirts and Bullshit detector.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Zero AI.
It just seems like what I love about it. What I love about it is, it helps practitioners. They can't, no matter how much we arm them with data, they're not going to be able to ask the questions and be able to find out. But the larger clients are going to be able to say, especially if you're doing it with another IO psychologist, that you're going to be able to actually talk to them and just go, okay, here's the deal. Yeah. Like, here's what you ultimately, this is what we're all judged on. This is the message that they're saying. Let's go. I mean, scientific theory. Let's just go see if it's true. It could be true, but let's not believe it's true until we can prove it to ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that helps everybody, not just IO psychologists that you interact with, but I think it helps practitioners because they're overwhelmed. I mean, you know this because you've been interacting mm-hmm. with them for years. They're overwhelmed with this stuff. They don't buy this stuff that often. Yeah. When they buy it, they're listening to all the hype. Like I've gotten in trouble for saying this, but it's okay. The HR practitioners, TA practitioners, they don't buy software. No. They're sold software, which gets back to the point you were making earlier in the discussion.
Hiring managers aren't hiring managers.
That's right. Exactly. They're not. They're managers that just so happen to hire. So what I love about it is you're actually there. This is a real problem and a real solution, because when someone says AI, they'll act like they totally get it. 100% algorithm. Spell that.
Algorithm. They know chat GPT. That's, it's the hype cycle.
Right. But they don't know. They don't know if that's true.
Right.
And I like the fact that someone's actually going to say yes or no.
Let me ask you a question here. And is it so you're on the front end, you're doing the due diligence for the company. We're looking to bring in a specific tool. It's going to cost us, $3 or $4 million annually to run this platform. We bring you in. Is this to vet this? Is this always a people process, or at some point does AI take over and you're able to, for thousands of softwares that are in the marketplace, pipe into it and anonymously or however, securely pull their data to run the BS test on them and truly report that back without a human being involved, or at least in the vetting process?
Yeah, great question. And certainly that is where we would like to get. So, you know, going back to when William called me a psychopath earlier, I mean, not directly, but implied. You implied. Let's just agree you implied it. I could say, hey, we built this platform and that's what it does. It automates everything 100%. That's not the case. And that would definitely be a lie. So, you know, for me, that's what we're building. That's what we have built, is a platform that does that to some extent, but it also requires a human in the loop, a PhD in this case, in the loop, and human handholding and stuff. So that's why I say, like, there's a dose of consulting with some automation, and over time the ratio is going to change, you know, as we get better at it. But it is, it's not fully automated, and it shouldn't be, and it can't be at this point in, you know, technological development. I don't think that would be dishonest. So, but the core technical innovation that we created, and this is largely at the genius of our chief data scientist, Rachel King. And I didn't even realize we could do this, but she enlightened me to this, and it continues to blow my mind still to this day. Gen AI, right? Gen AI comes out November 2022, and you know, everybody goes crazy, obviously, super exciting and interesting, and, you know, problematic in a lot of ways, but also really exciting. So what we can do with Gen AI and the way we're using it is it's baked into our platform in a fundamental way. And essentially what it allows us to do is study not just numerical data like a, you know, like a business intelligence dashboard would do, right? You read in some data and you have some charts that you can look at. Great. You know, that, you know, that's a business intelligence solution. We can read in the numerical data, but we can also read in unstructured information like text and essentially study it at scale. That's crazy. Cool. Like think about, you know, if you just meditate on the possibilities of what you can do with that idea, and you come up with all kinds of things that run the gamut far outside of HR tech, other aspects of the world. We can study essentially all the data in the world now at scale and start to make sense of it in a way that we never could before Gen AI. And it's not perfect. And that's why we have the human in the loop, and we can't read everything in, but we can certainly make a lot of progress doing that. And the way that we're about to demonstrate this to the market is we're going to release a report on the large language models, the top 10 large language models, where we rate them on our model, which is called Violet. And I can tell you about that, but it's basically like a holistic model to think about everything that's important in evaluating an AI or an algorithm. And so we apply that to the large language models, and we read in all of the documentation, hundreds, thousands of pages, hundreds of documents for all these models. And we scored it, you know, very, very quickly using our engine, which we call Iris, that's Gen AI based. So to do that manually with PhDs would have taken thousands of hours. And instead it took, you know, still a chunk of time, but probably 100 hours or something, you know, so vastly shortened the time scale to objectively evaluate these huge sets of information.
Are the LLMs the public ones, or are these ones that are kind of industry specific, or
the foundation models? So, like, you know, Google Gemini and OpenAI's, you know, ChatGPT and that type of thing. So,
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The question, because you'd actually be one of the guests that might actually be able to answer this. I've been reading about the large language models that we have right now. Most of them are based in morality. Like there's a moral, explicit or implicit, but there's a moral to what's going on. Like I, at one point when ChatGPT first came out, I went to it and I was playing around with it for about 5 seconds. And I'm like, write the obituary of William Tincup in 500 words. And it's like with great sadness, you know, it just does this bit. And then I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. Okay, now write the same thing, but in Richard Pryor's voice. And it wouldn't let me.
Really?
It actually came back and said, we can't do that. Okay, with death and with humor, the two can't coexist. We can't do that. And so I kept edging around it like Sam Kinison, Bill Cosby, whatever. So I kept trying different things and it still wouldn't do it. It wouldn't at that time, it wouldn't put humor with death. And I'm like,
interesting.
How are you? Well, of course. Ryan makes fun of me. He's like, that's the first thing you did with ChatGPT? That's dark.
Wrote his obituary.
Really dark. But it's like, but again, I don't know if that's true or if that's just, again, if that's just hype or people talking about it.
Well, you see it in, you know, the Google Gemini situation where it released, you know, pictures of black Nazis and things. you know, there's this thing that's happening at a lot of these companies where they try to interject a level of oversight into what these models are producing. And, you know, it's an experiment, you know, they're trying to figure out what should we be doing here? How should we fix this problem of bias? Because, you know, these models just read the internet and, oh, guess what? There's a little bit of bias on the internet. So how do we control that? How do we harness that? How do we get rid of that? So, you know, I think there's probably some ham-fisted sort of attempts going on that are not the best at this point. And I don't know that there's a perfect solution for it. I think it's may never get there. So,
well, we liken it to, it's a lot of guests. We liken to where we are right now to back to your 1996 story of the beginning of the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, the beginning of the internet, there's a bunch of people that knew about it before the interfaces kind of came out. Once the interfaces came out, it was the Wild West. Mm-hmm. And so AI, and it's going to happen a lot faster, but it's going to be, you remember that period where people were like, oh, and you can do this with the internet, and you can do this with the World Wide Web, and you can do this. They're doing the same thing with AI, and it's like, well, some of that will hit. Well, some of that will never happen.
Right. But, you know, one of the things that I'm really focused on and we are really focused on is outcomes.
Right.
Like there are companies that are approaching AI auditing and algorithmic auditing and trying to peer inside the algorithm and, you know, look at the code and fix problems with the code and stuff like that.
Calibration.
We're not doing that. We're looking at the outcomes that come out of these tools. And at the end of the day, that's what I feel like is realistic to focus on, because it's a, you know, the black box of how these things work. We're never going to completely make the perfect LLM that says exactly the perfect thing at all times. But what we can do is we can evaluate how that tool is being used and the impact it's having on individuals and organizations. We can look at that data. We can collect that data. We can find that data. And you know, we can see if you're using an LLM in some sort of hiring tool, well, it might be beyond any individual to really understand that LLM in depth. I mean, I would submit to you that even the engineers behind it 100% don't understand how it works.
Right. But in pre-hiring or in hiring, for sure.
But what we can look at is the outcomes. Who did you hire? How well did they perform? And that stuff. So let's harness what we can access and see. And if we find out that at the end of the day, it's not biased against protected classes or other groups of people, and it works and it's effective, and, you know, there's messaging in place that shows the candidates all the, you know, the visibility behind the tool so they understand it's there. And, you know, there's a lot of pieces that we look at. But if we do all that stuff, then, you know.
Right.
Is there room for a recommendation engine after you determine the output to the client? Is that something that you're doing now?
Here's how it could be fixed. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Well, so let's take it on the enterprise side. So companies buying software, they have the software. You're in there and you're saying, okay, here's your output. It's not good. Mm-hmm. Here's our recommendation. The output of the of the program, of the solution is good, you're not leveraging it properly.
I have a follow-up to that once he's done.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's not something we've, you know, created at scale or anything like that, but certainly right. like the stuff that we, the information that we provide needs to be actionable. Otherwise, yeah. you know, what's the point, right? So there's right. got to be clear actions you can take to improve things from this. And so in our system, once you see a score, then you can drill down and you can see what's causing the score to be low or high. And you can drill down and, you know, assess specific, look at specific factors that you can mm-hmm. fix. Yeah.
And Ryan was, in that question, it was assumptive that they had already purchased the software. But in my mind, for some reason, I had y'all before they buy the software. So that they could make
it's on
a better
both sides. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Could it yeah, could it be on both sides, or where do you feel like Vero AI plays the best?
Well, so what we have is we have a engine where you can the client can essentially upload information and documents directly to it. So right. you could say, "Hey, we're trying to evaluate, you know, five different vendors." And we would say, "Okay, cool. Here's an upload link. Just upload all the documents they sent you, ask them for technical reports, ask them for terms and conditions, ask them for anything that you want, hundreds, oh, cool. thousands of pages, doesn't matter. Upload it and then hit a button and then the system can process it and score it on Violet or anything else. Like, for example, another use case would be like ISO certifications
right.
or, you know, any sort of certification routine, which is largely done manually and can be very time consuming and involve tons of people and costs and everything, upload all the documents and information. And we can't automate it 100%, but we can automate it a lot and make it much, much faster. So any sort of use case like that. So, you know, in before the software is purchased, we can analyze the documents. After, we can analyze the documents and the data.
Outputs. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Where do you believe that your first customers, maybe your first 50 or 100 customers, where do you think that they're going to buy you at? Where do you think they're going to utilize you?
We've had a lot of interest from procurement type of yeah. organizations, for yeah. sure, procurement. But then there's also governance, risk, compliance, GRC stuff. And yep. that's where you get into the ISO stuff and the SOC certifications and all these things. There's a million of these different certification routines. And so, you know, this is a great, great use of generative AI to be able to process and understand and really attach numerical quantitative ratings to all the factors we pull out of these huge sets of information. So tons of stuff can be automated and sped up there. Again, we still have that human in the loop because you can't leave it on its own. So it's not like right. we don't yet have a viable path to just clicking a button and instantly available. I think there's a right. little bit of a lag, which is appropriate, but it's still vastly sped up from, you know, what would happen before.
Yeah. So how do you, okay. So a couple questions here. One is in the world of instant gratification, and I'll use my girls that, you know, they take a test, they immediately get their score because it's done on yeah. Canvas or whatever, and yeah. it immediately scores them, tells them what they got wrong, and all of this other stuff where we had to wait a week to get yeah. our test grades back right now, which is fantastic for me. They come home, "How'd you do on your test?" "I don't know." "Oh, I know how you did. It's right here." Like it scores you that quick. Yeah. What's that conversation like with a client that says, "Okay, we're doing this. We need it next week," right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a path that you guys have there. And then secondly, in that process, what questions should they be asking you, or what questions should they have in their mind that prompt them to reach out to a company like you?
Yeah. So because the core technology, it can be used in so many ways. Like one of our challenges is like narrowing in, rifle-shotting right. into specific mm-hmm. cases, because geez, there's a million things you could do with this type of thing. So it starts with a given client. Right now, it's going to start with a discussion about what they really need to know and find out and what their questions really are. And then we can say, okay, here's what we need from you. We need this documentation, this information uploaded here. And then we can talk about the Violet model itself and whether that is the particular set of metrics you need and are interested in, or if it's something else like an ISO, you know, certification or something like that, or maybe you're just concerned about a few of the elements from the Violet model or whatever. So we would have those discussions. And so once we have that type of clarity, then I think you know, the client's in a position to provide us with the information we need. And essentially we run the model and review it to make sure it's right. And they can have the output in, you know, very, very short order at that point. So what's the actual delay? How much time does it really take that we have to review things? I think it depends on the use case. It can be from almost nothing to, you know, it could take a few days or something if it's really complicated information, but, that's the type of thing that will evolve. And certainly we want to shorten that window down. But if it takes us a couple of days, then you can be sure that in, you know, without that, it would take probably half a year or something. Yeah.
If ever.
Yeah.
Two things. One is on the output side. So let's say you're doing a lot of work on the output side with a lot of vendors understanding kind of the separation of their marketing message from reality and what you see in the data. It seems to me that at one point you're going to be sitting on a rating system of people's, again, the bullshit detector. Mm-hmm. And so if I have that right, it seems like you could create awards based on who's actually the outputs. Again, getting to the outputs.
Yeah.
And if the outputs are truer to what their marketing message is, it seems like you'd be able to be in a position and then say, yeah. And again, I'm not going to say any names of companies or anything, but yes, this one, their marketing message, their sales message, and the outputs that we see is with our customers, pretty spot on, pretty close.
Yeah. I would love to be able to do that. I mean, just to provide sort of an objective measure of truthfulness, you know, I think would be great. And, you know, I think of like the Violet model for us is sort of like anybody, any system we score on that now, like the large language models that we are scoring, we did score, they're not perfect. They're not great.
No.
On all the factors. But it's like when the, you know, when the Insurance Institute comes up with a new crash test and all the cars fail on it, it came up with something new. It takes a year or two for the automakers to catch up. So I want to put out this idea of Violet as a human-centered model to think about AI. And if you score well on it, then that means you're deploying AI in a way that's not only good for a company, but also good for an individual. And so it's a target. And then hopefully it can become a metric that companies try to hit, that vendors try to hit and make their tools, you know, still better on it.
I love that.
Yeah, I like, and I love the award idea. Yeah. Because there's, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking there's a ton of award programs out there.
Oh.
It's all about creativeness and how innovative it was and how funny it was.
Very subjective.
Yeah.
Very subjective.
Nothing about, I mean, you got all these fact checker sites and all this crap with the election, but nothing on the marketing side.
This would actually true up their message versus reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what's beautiful about it, you said independent and objective, which is exactly what I was thinking as well. It's like, here's a firm that can actually, we don't have a dog in this race or whatever. Like, we don't care. What we care about is understanding the outputs as it relates to what you're saying the outputs should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think that's going to help. In doing that, that helps practitioners sleep at night.
Yeah.
Understanding what they bought actually does what they says it was going to do. The second question I had is just IO psychologists. Have you talked to a lot of your friends and shown them kind of things that you can do? Like, what is their take?
On
they called him a psychopath and walked away.
I mean,
no, that's a tin cup thing. You're good.
I did, but they were so drunk that I don't even know if they really were listening. But they love it. They're an easy target because they're scientists.
Yeah.
Trained scientists. Like, they're the easy ones. I don't even need to explain it. You know, it's the challenge comes in when you're talking to people who don't have that scientific background, I think. And, you know, one thing that's I've noticed that's interesting in the world today is you see a lot of this where somebody, like, let's say Google Gemini is a fantastic and amazing LLM, the best one that's out there, but they did this black Nazi thing and now everybody thinks it sucks. That's an anecdote. That's a one, you know, so scientists, you know, don't think in terms of anecdotes.
No, that's a,
you don't care about the anecdote.
It's a rounding error.
You care about overall, is it trending in the right direction when you look at the aggregate data and you look at correlations and significance levels and things. That's what we're trained to care about. So, but the media works almost exclusively on anecdotes.
Yeah, because they're just trying to get clicks. They're trying to sell advertising. Yeah. So to come out and do a story on, yep, it's working.
Yeah.
Nobody clicks on that story.
Yeah.
You
know? Right. It's not
that's
fun.
That's just the world we live in.
Yeah.
What success for 2024? What is the goal? Yeah. We're damn near at the end of Q1. Yeah. What do you look back at January and 25? What was success for you?
Well, I think that this takes time. This takes time. Yeah. You know, it'd be so much easier if we just came out with this Violet model and started doing consulting around it. Easy.
Right.
You know, that you can hit the ground tomorrow and start doing that. But architecting, building, refining a scaled engine that essentially can make sense of vast amounts of information using cutting edge technology, like, you know, it takes some time. So, and there's also the barrier of just explaining what the heck we're talking about to people because it is new. You know, you could think of it as sort of like a next gen business intelligence dashboard board as right. one way to think about it. I also talk a lot about the Violet as a scoreboard, not a dashboard. So like right. if you think about going to a baseball game and there's no scoreboard and you're just trying to figure out who's winning based on how fast the people look like they're running, that's a business dashboard today. Right.
100%.
So we're trying to spell things out in a way that's not typically done. So, you know, there's this sort of barrier. We have to do a lot of education around what it is that we're actually talking about. So, I mean, basically, I think the rest of this year for us is focused on, new client acquisition and working with them on their use cases. And it's going to be a little more consulting than it will ultimately be down the road. But that's great. That's fine. That's how we learn and improve and get better. And then probably, you know, funding, some of our time is going to be devoted to funding as well. And just looking for some outside sources and partners and things like that.
Where'd you do your PhD?
The University of Akron.
Yeah. It's funny because PSYOP is one of the professions, or PSYOP, not the industrial psychology, IO psychologist, is one of the professions where schools, like it's a thing.
Yeah.
Like the teachers that you had, all of that stuff, that's a thing.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments at PSYOP was I was with Dr. Hogan of Hogan Assessments, him and his wife, and I'm a marketer, or at least a recovering marketer, I should say. So I'm sitting there and we're drinking and having a good time. And I said, listen, can I just be honest? He goes, well, your personality tells me you're just going to be honest anyhow, but thanks for the heads up. I said, you're talking over people's heads. You're just fucking, you know, I'm not saying you need to dumb shit down, but you're not using their words.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you're using the words of IO psychologists. So if that's your target, great. Keep doing what you're doing. But if you're trying to get more of a mass appeal, you're just going to have to change your words.
Yeah.
And it was a great conversation for him to hear. And then actually it took a little while, but it's for him to hear that, okay, for the IO psychologists that we interact with, there is a different language.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get there faster because of some other reasons, because we have a shared vernacular and all that other stuff. Yeah. But with this other group of people, these HR people, these recruiting people, they don't use those words. They don't use those words. So it's almost like with this new business, it being new, and you have to explain what it does. And then also the words that you choose to then explain that is going to be dependent on the audience that you see.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's been the story of my entire career so far. So it's like nothing new, but it is always challenging. I mean, that's why Sagan said, you know, skepticism doesn't sell, science doesn't sell. People want an easy answer and easy 100%. Solution and, hey, it's great, trust us, here it is, and that's it. You don't have to think about it. So there,
AI, bullshit detector.
Right.
Seventh grade literacy. Just.
I mean, and nobody even knows what AI is, you know. It's no one. I mean, you know, everybody's got a different idea of what it means. I have a book that I wrote a couple of years ago, and it has AI in the subtitle, and I was mailing it at UPS, and the person behind the counter said, oh, I'm scared of that stuff. And I said, what stuff? And she said, robots.
Whoops.
Say anything about robots on here, you know, like, but that's, you know, everybody thinks of AI. Everybody thinks AI is a scary robot from the future sent back in time to kill you. That's basically,
yeah,
you know,
because that's what sells.
Yes.
Again, fear sells. Yeah. It sells in the media. Your pricing model right now, obviously being consulting, and then obviously you're going to be doing probably over time more and more tech and getting to probably maybe even a SaaS model.
Yeah.
Some type of SaaS model.
Yeah.
Ryan's already asked you what questions that that practitioners should ask of you because it is so new. Mm-hmm. So I won't ask that question, but I am curious as to kind of, you've been in the space for a long time. You've got a lot of folks that you've already interacted with historically. Are you going to go back out? This was when PeopleSoft was acquired 2 years after that. Dave went out and basically sold to 200 of his clients that he had with PeopleSoft. The first 200 clients of Workday were PeopleSoft clients. Mm-hmm. So he just went back to the people that he already knew and said, yeah, I got, it's the same thing, or probably do more eloquently. It's the same thing, but it's in the cloud.
Yeah.
Is the plan to kind of go back out to the folks that you already know, or is it to build a new audience?
A little of both. I mean, my co-founders and I, we certainly have a lot of contacts in the HR tech space, right. Certainly in PSYOP and the IO world, of course. But, right. You know, it's really just our initial market, I think, is because right. We know that space. A real goal is to, you know, get our feet on the ground in HR tech, but then expand out of HR tech, healthcare, you know, fintech. I mean, every space is ripe for this type of capability. So we want to be able to harness AI or complicated algorithms, whatever they may be, anywhere. It's different. So it's not like anything that people are familiar with. So we have to explain, even in our own space, you know, how it would work and what it would look like and everything.
So I'll give you a last thing I'll do. That's why I call you an alcoholic and a psychopath. Is when people think about differentiation, the problem that they usually run into is they're so different. Like what you've built is different. But for it to sink into someone's mind, you have to make it like something that they know, the hook. Mm-hmm. So if you spend your time saying we're different, we're different, we're different, we're different, we're different, all they hear is, yeah, I don't have budget for that, or that's too experimental, or whatever. But if you say, well, think of Consumer Reports, right? What was Consumer Reports? Yeah, these little circles, and you know, this gave you kind of some insight into, they did some testing, and it gave you kind of a guidebook on, you know, what to avoid and what you should do. Yeah, now just fast forward, mm-hmm. 30, 40 years, AI meets Consumer Reports, and we give you a guide on what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. So it's like something. Mm-hmm. That's where most people get differentiation wrong, is they're focused on, hey, we're different. It's like, yeah, that's actually not helping your case.
Right.
The more you talk about different, the more they hear FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Yeah. Huh.
So when you anchor this, Consumer Reports might not be the thing, but anchor it in something that they know.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's super good feedback, I think. Yeah, that's helpful, because we're always in this continual process of trying to figure out, how can we explain this in a way that people understand in as few words as possible?
100%.
So yeah, that's great. That's very good.
Thank you so much for coming 100%. On. This has been fantastic to learn about. And if you're still listening, watching, subscribe to us. You see us out there, say hello. Eric, thank you again. We will see you next time.